Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, taking a look at the final portion of our action plan series. We are looking at the rookies. So I think I mentioned in prior shows that not all of my drafts are done. So I had my old school leagues. So the ones that started when I was basically first getting into Dynasty, they've gone through a series of ownership changes. It was like Quest at some point. It was a couple other companies, and then Safe Leagues bought them. And now they sort of operate, you know, a lot of the same parameters they did, I'd say, like 5 years ago in the pre-Safe Leagues era. This has probably been like the fourth owner of these leagues. They've been sold and, you know, rebranded. And it's funny when you go back and track all the names. But one of the old vestiges that has survived has been the two-part rookie draft. And this has always been strategic, right? 301 is a lot more valuable than 212, for example. It's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting setup because you get the added information. There's been some notable guys in the third round that have seen upticks, and so that pick has actually been pretty valuable. That 301 could potentially draw a future first plus, which is interesting when you sort of look at it. It's been a variety of different guys over the years that have been really valuable. So with that caveat aside, you know, so some of these numbers, especially on the lower level guys, are gonna go up. But I figured I'd sort of, you know, we'll put a pin in it here and just take a look, you know, at some action plans. So Kenny Ngannou, the most owned rookie. I suspect that one will probably remain true. I think that I will have a fair amount of shares of him in those two-part leagues. 27%. Yeah, I don't really know what to expect other than he was going a lot later than he was drafted at the position. So, you know, early day three guy, he's like 10th, 11th, 12th running back off the board. His profile is a little bit questionable in terms of not a ton of production, but like athletes like him just don't grow on trees. So I'll take the exploratory shot. That's a profile that I think works the absolute best at running back. We've seen this. Antonio Gibson's a good example. David Johnson's a good example. We've seen examples of it fail. Kalen Ballage, the scar tissue is still there. I've got the scars to prove it. So we'll see. But this one's much cheaper than Ballage, so I like that. I think I've learned something from the Ballage angle, which is basically don't do that with day three guys. So you get Ngannou basically almost a full round later, and where Ballage was going, and I kind of like it. So, you know, we'll see. Could he be a cut guy? For sure. Could he be, could he potentially displace Madison? I mean, I guess that's possible too. I don't think that's what the outcome is. I think he's being groomed more as a return guy. And then look, Madison's going to be up in a couple years, and then Ngannou can step up and, you know, potentially develop into a person that can make Madison expendable. So I think all those things are really possible. So we'll be on the watch for that. He's in the larger leagues. I'm just going to hold and see, like, where I got a roster spot. Absolutely just hold and see what we have to offer. There's enough raw pieces there, you know, enough raw talent that if he gets an opportunity, I think he can make something with it. So I'm holding for a second right now. You know, if I could go third to second, something like that, it's fine. I think that would be, you know, an ideal situation right now. I don't think that's going to happen. But, positive news or something like that, that's what we're kind of bailing on. Trey Sermon's the next guy, 23%. Actually, Chuba Hubbard's right there with him. So Sermon, it was one of those ones that I wish I had more. I just didn't. Like, the Sermon example might be a good lesson. I didn't pull the plug on any leagues, and I'd be sort of interested what the AOD community would say about this. You know, I tried to fire a lot of bullets in playoffs, get into a lot of playoffs last year, and I wonder if that would have, I don't know how much selling of Mike Davis I could have done, for example. You know, in hindsight, it's probably good I didn't sell at the bail levels that I could have. But I didn't do it on Bernard probably enough, and Gallman. You know, I was sort of getting by with them, and so they were keeping me, in some contention, some leagues that maybe I should have sold out on. But then again, I won a couple of those, so I don't know. It's an interesting debate there in terms of how much more rookie exposure I should have had. Sermon's one of those guys in prior years I probably would have had more, but I fired a lot of bullets at trying to get into playoffs last year, and not necessarily trading away picks, but I wasn't heavy on picks, and when you're not heavy on picks, it can be really tough to move around the rookie board. So I've been sort of attuned to that, trying to stock up on additional rookie picks here for future years and in the off season, especially when you can trade between profiles. I think it's really, really great. So that's been one of the drawbacks, just not enough Sermon. But first plus, what I'm looking for, I think Camp Buzz, it's already beginning. So, we'll see the Jeff Wilson angle to this. That's, I think that there's three hurdles, I guess. There's the Mostert hurdle. There's the Jeff Wilson hurdle. There's the Wayne Gallman hurdle. And then I guess the last one is that he's got to be good. And I think the best analogy I heard from this was actually a subscriber basically saying that we don't even need Sermon to be good. We need him to basically be J.K. Dobbins, right? And you sort of saw what happened with Dobbins, a little bit buried. And within like a week, it was a huge uptick in cost. And I didn't even need to hang around to see if Dobbins is good, if I didn't want to. But I could have absolutely taken the profit, upgraded to the position, and moved it along. Could have taken picks, could have gone any number of ways. I didn't have to stay and bang. I didn't have to stand there and take the punches to find out if he was good or not. I could have just pivoted. And I think that's a very similar thing with Sermon. So, if there's a week, right, I don't think you need to – you can sort of get away with the Sermon angle on this. I think he has more than just his base rate outcome. And there's something, it's a week he goes off, something like that. I think he could sell for profit if you want to at that point. I think there's a lot of outs with him. So it's sort of the angle on him. I think he's just even more above a base rate guy. But I think some of the receivers, some of those things can be hard to do. So I think there's some hidden stuff there with the running backs. Chuba Hubbard, similarly, I think he's an interesting injury away guy. I don't see a clear answer to who the injury away guy is in Carolina outside of Chuba Hubbard. So I wasn't a huge fan of his profile. I think he runs kind of soft. But, I'm banking on basically a Mike Davis role, and Mike Davis pre-injury role. And then, we'll see what happens there, pre-injury to McCaffrey role. We'll see what happens there. Could he be a cut guy? Probably not. He's probably a guy that I'm going to hold on to. For some reason he is drawing second round rookie pick valuations, I'm fine moving that along and taking what I consider probably an upgrade in terms of profiles next year with the pick, with the liquidity, I'll do all that. But again, if something happens to McCaffrey and Chuba Hubbard gets a job, right, second to first maybe on its own, that type of valuation package for a falling player, that's kind of the avenue we're looking for. Ramondre Stevenson, I got his name right, which has been a troubling thing. I wanted to add a hyphenated name. I don't know where I got that from. But Ramondre Stevenson, got him at 19%. I think that number goes up with the split drafts. Same with Hubbard, too. I think that number might go up a bit. I think that the roadway is very, very clear for how he gets there, which is I think Sony Michel's good as gone in the next, call it 12 months, whether that's 2 months from now, whether that's 6 months from now in free agency. I'm not sure. 6 months, I guess more 9 months free agency, next March. I think Sony Michel's gone. James White on a 1 year deal. Rex Burkhead gone. So when you sort of look at the position, Harris and Ramondre Stevenson can be the two guys hanging out on the depth chart. Ramondre Stevenson has two-way ability. I think Harris has that too. But if you want to go multiple, Ramondre Stevenson is a guy that can absolutely do that. And that's the scary part, is that he's very good from a receiving perspective, very good from a running perspective. Again, older, sort of has all those caveats aside. But just with what he did on the field this year, it's a pretty interesting profile. And so I look at that and I think, hey, that's a could be a prime 2022 injury away guy. Right? I think that's well within his range of outcomes. It's honestly in his range of outcomes to be that guy this year. I don't think Sony Michel is a foregone conclusion to be the guy. If Ramondre Stevenson's really good in the preseason, that could make Sony Michel expendable. So I think that would be a smashing success, I think. But that's the type of bet that we're taking there. You know, we're watching for an uptick if Sony Michel or James White are cut or leave. Najee Harris, 15%. Won't have any more of him. I'm looking for a pivot up the position. I think right now he's a solid asset. You know, could I pivot higher? That'd be something I'm going to look to potentially do. I don't love their offensive line. I don't love their offense, for that matter. So we'll see. I think that he could be a potential pivot guy. I'm not running away from him at any point. I think he could potentially go up the board a little bit. I'm not sure exactly who I want to hunt at this particular moment with him, but I think just holding him right now is fine. And the play may be to hold him long term, but I think the play might also be to, you know, if there's a scenario, yeah, does he start well and he's a pivot towards sitting out Watson, something like that? Is he a pivot towards an injured quarterback, something like that? I think those things are very, very possible too. So I like the asset. I don't love the older running back, but I do like the asset. So we'll sort of see where that takes us. Pat Freiermuth, again, Cole Kmet, 2.0. I think he's still available in some of those third rounds that I've discussed, so I would imagine that this one goes higher as well. Tommy Tremble, same story. Noah Gray, same story. Jamar Jefferson, all the same story there on guys that could potentially be more exposure. If we did this, you know, September 1st instead of last week of June. So I tend to be a guy as a drafter who is the best, sometimes the best thing to do is just the blocking and tackling aspect of we'll just collect falling pedigree. And those are, you know, some of the bets that we've done. I like Noah Gray. I think the film folks like Noah Gray a little bit better than maybe some of the metric stuff would indicate. I thought the landing spot was pretty interesting. He's already got some buzz going on. Two tight end sets, you know, going to roll him out there. With Kelsey and an offense that doesn't have a clear wide receiver too, all those things, like, it's an interesting concept there. So, in the next 24 months, I think there becomes a point where Kelsey's contract becomes, you know, a significant cost savings, and that'll coincide with him aging. So, I think I'm not certain that Noah Gray is the next coming of Travis Kelsey or anything like that. I do think he's an interesting asset to own in a Kansas City offense. And those other guys, you know, Tremble, I think he has an opportunity as well. Jamar Jefferson a little bit deeper down the line. We'll sort of see what happens with him. Hoping that he lands, you know, in a roster spot, basically, and we'll sort of see where that goes. He's a very deep – he's like in a – I have him in like a Devy League in a 40-man roster. Like, that's the type of depth that I have him at present. Travis Etienne, 8%. Elijah Moore, 8%. Rondell Moore, 8%. I could get out of Elijah Moore and Rondell Moore and be just fine. They're potential pivot guys. I'd like to get more of Travis Etienne, so hopefully some negative camp buzz, and he's a buying opportunity. You know, James Robinson comes out 18 carries in week one to like 4 for Etienne. I'm going to dance right down the street, sending out some offers for Etienne, you know, with some of these other guys. So that's absolutely something we'll be looking to do. Kellen Mond, I managed to coerce myself into 8% of. It's so fascinating to me because you see some of these, and this is the quarterback position is so unique. I won't even pretend to think that I've got it, like a good grasp of it. Like, and that's a lot of why, my process tends to be, we'll just take the cheapest one, right? We kind of know it's random. In the top 10 guys, we'll just take the cheapest one, right? That's kind of a lot of what we do, or we'll pivot to something we know a lot more of. Well, Kellen Mond represented a different thing, and I've tried to incorporate this a little bit more. I've been really trying to get, you know, take in film analysis and pair it with data. I think Kellen Mond's an interesting example of, you talk to or you listen to some of the film guys, like, hey, there's some things that he does on tape that are pretty good. And maybe the system didn't really fit him. He's overwhelmed by talent. He's kind of playing with a lesser cast of characters, and they're playing out of their depth, you know, against some of these SEC defenses. But there's some stuff on tape that you really look at and you can see, and like, hey, maybe he's the top five guy in his class and all those things. Like, there's multiple people that I sort of trust for this. I don't know what the answer is, but at a deep enough level, like, we'll do that. There became a time in rookie drafts where it was like Davis Mills, Kellen Mond, Kyle Trask, like, kind of take your pick. And again, I was usually doing just the cheapest one and ended up with a fair amount of Mond. Again, I think it's more of a longer term hold, but he does have some physical abilities. I thought the comp that was interesting, I think they're different players. I think they're different statistically as well. So, I love Dak Prescott, but he drew some Dak Prescott comps. I don't think that's really the sphere of what we're talking about. But similar type of scenario where he was in an SEC offense that was kind of overwhelmed with some of the talent around them. And he, you know, basically, it's the NFL. It's more of a neutral playing field, and he's able to, some of his other traits are able to sort of come out because he's not, his guys aren't overwhelmed. I thought that was an interesting, I don't necessarily buy that per se all the way, but it's an interesting idea. Again, it was cheap enough that I do think that there's a point in Superflex where you have to sort of stockpile. If you're going to sort of be, you know, day three running backs, you know, later day two wide receivers, you know, later day two tight ends in some extent, you know, depending on who they are, or day three tight ends, it makes some sense just to take the premium position. And I think more and more as we sort of look at these scenarios, like the Jalen Hurts example is appropriate. Just like, should we have been more on him? And I hate drawing conclusions from one person sample sizes. I think that's a fraught process as well. But I do think, you know, we look back at these things and we should they adjust what our strategy is. I think Mond's at market value, so it wouldn't be crazy. But in prior years, I probably wouldn't have been on him. So I do think it's an uptick from what my prior was, and you know, we'll see how it turns out. But I think that that's kind of the nature of the investment. I did land myself a share, I believe, of Kyle Trask as well. It's not picking up on my tracker, but I believe I did grab one of him as well. And I think it was in one of the leagues that I actually can't track on my tracker. I think that's why. So, you know, it was the same sort of argument. He was kind of the cheapest one of those three guys, and I'll just take him. Kadarius Toney, again, collect the following pedigree. That was kind of an easy one. Only 8%, though. It was deeper in, like, start one. It basically became, like, end of second round and start one. Javonte Williams. I think him being a starter week one is something that is probably in his range of outcomes. He kind of strikes me as like maybe a better version of Devin Singletary. That's kind of what he grades out like. You know, look at some of the PFF data and sort of those things. He's very good at breaking tackles and all that stuff. I'm not sure it's a huge athlete, right? So I think, you know, we'll sort of see how that all unfolds. You know, I like the player. I question some of the upside stuff. So again, if he's a guy we could pivot towards an upside guy, a higher upside guy, core guy, something like that, or go two for one. You know, maybe he's part of a package for a falling quarterback. All those sorts of ideas firmly in play with him. You know, I'm not wedded to him, by evidenced by the fact that he's an 8% ownership guy. John Bates, super, super deep, potential cut guy, that's fine. Single share guys are, I guess, 4%. They might be two. No, I think they're all, these are largely single share guys. Rashad Bateman, De'Ami Brown, super late. Dwayne Eskridge, super late. Kenneth Gainwell, pretty late. Hunter Long, again, so a couple of these guys, so let's say like Hunter Long is one I'd probably rack up a bunch of shares of in that, in those deeper leagues. So I would imagine he goes higher, you know, in the overall rankings. I think he's like my 20th owned rookie, something like that. I'd imagine he gets closer to like 10 probably by the time it's all said and done. Zach Wilson, 4% as well. Stick a falling share. I think it was actually in start one, if I'm, if memory serves. Kylan Granson, he'll be a guy I add. Some of these start one, and some of these split drafts as well. Gerard Dokes, this guy I probably should have had a little bit more of, had one share of. Maybe I'll add him more on some of these later drafts. We'll sort of see how that one folds out. I actually traded him at one point already. So, so that's pretty much the breakdown point. I got a share of Kyle Pitts in a juiced up tight end premium league, so I like that one quite a bit. I got one of Mac Jones, got one of Trey Lance, no Trevor Lawrence, actually no Justin Fields either. So I just didn't really fall out. I do think that if I had more picks, I probably would have been much more in on Mac Jones, for example. But it just didn't have a ton there in that particular range. I wasn't trading up out of Sermon to go get him. So we'll see how that turns out. But that was the play ultimately. That's pretty much the rookie picks. Again, I think a lot of these will go up in valuation. Right now, I believe I have 26, 27 rookies in total, rostered. And I'd say about 15 of them are multi-share guys. And then you sort of get up into the nine that are really, basically 10% or more. And so those are some of the guys that are a little bit deeper. Basically, the 2X guys, Harris, Stevenson, Hubbard, Sermon, Ngannou, and that 2X will go up, as the time goes along. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.